3 4-year terms, overall limit of 12 years for any elected county official, including the legislators. What do you say?
I've always been supportive of term limits. I believe that we need more people to come into government, serve, make a difference, and then move on. And I think we have too many people that stay too long, and then they end up making decisions to protect their position as opposed to doing what's right for the citizens. So I think it's a great start. Certainly, I'm not a legislator, so I'm not involved in the negotiations on this. I do think it might be a little too long of a term as far as, I wouldn't have a problem if it was only 2 terms. And the retroactivity that they have, or the lack of retroactivity, meaning that, you know, if it's passed now and you have been in for 20 years, you can go for another 12. That might be something I think, Legislator DeLurigo had mentioned some concern with that. And I understand that, but I also understand that you're trying to get 6 votes at a minimum, and so there might be some concessions, and we can't have the perfect be the enemy of the good. And I think generally, any form of term limit is good. It's good public policy, and I think if it went to a referendum, I think it would be overwhelmingly supported by the voters.
But you wouldn't, and recognizing that maybe they have to fashion it in a way that will get support from everybody, you wouldn't mind seeing your position or the county executive or the comptroller all being just 2 4-year terms, 8 years total?
I wouldn't. I think 8 years is a good amount of time. I think it gives you a real motivation to come in and make a difference and then move on. You can always come back to it, but I just think we have too many situations where people stay too long in a position, and certainly there's people who do great jobs for 40 years, but more and more we hear cases of people starting to make decisions that are leaning more towards protecting their position, playing it safe, catering to constituencies that will keep them in office as opposed to what's good for the long term. Now, I do think there may be an issue constitutionally with the district attorney. I think there's been some case law on that because of the unique nature of the role of the district attorney. So they may have to think whether that needs to be carved out and not a term limit on the district attorney. I think there was a case downstate in a court of appeals that ruled that.
Now, you're currently in your second 4-year term, aren't you? Does that mean you wouldn't see yourself running for clerk again?
Well, actually, I think it would. I'm in my second. I filled a term.
Okay, yep,
the remainder of Kathy Hochul's term, so I guess technically I would be able to run one more time, depending on how the law would read. But, yes, I love my job. I think I'm doing a difference, but I never envisioned it as a permanent job for 20, 30 years. So I wouldn't have a problem with that. And I think that what it protects is far more important than the outlier situations where there's good people that can't stay on for beyond 12 years. So I'm supportive of it. I always had been. When I ran for state legislature, I was supportive of it. And I was supportive of it even on the school board.
Now, Chris, this next line of questioning had to come up, obviously. Your name has been mentioned from time to time as a possible Republican candidate for county executive. If you're ready to declare here on this program, I'd love to have you make news. But I'm guessing you're too smart of a guy to go there quite yet. Where is your head on that issue?
Well, I'm flattered by the encouragement I've had by a lot of people. I'm also very gratified for how well we did in my reelection this past November, earning 67% of the vote in a gubernatorial year, which is typically a harder year for Republicans. So that's the highest percentage of any Republican in well over a decade countywide. So I really am gratified that the voters are happy with the job I am doing as clerk. First and foremost, I'm focusing on my job as clerk and evaluating whether I've done what I wanted to do there, and whether it's time for me to look at other opportunities to serve. But as I said to Bob McCarthy, I honestly, if there's opportunities to make a difference and be in a position to make a bigger difference in serving this community, and I think I can do a better job, I will seriously look at it. I'm really just evaluating it, talking to people, listening to it, and also hard at work after an election at the clerk's office. But, you know, we have some time here, and in due course, I'll make a decision.
What does evaluating it mean? What kind of talks are underway, if you can describe them?
Well, I'm talking to people in the community, learning a bit about what is going on beyond my role as clerk. Personally evaluating my desire to do it, and again, factoring all those in, and also, you know, as I we have some major initiatives going on at the clerk's office, and seeing where those are, feeling comfortable if in fact I did move on, are those well placed and institutionalized to move forward enough? So those are the things that I'm looking at this point.
All right, let's talk about some of those initiatives. One of the things I know that you've been pushing for a while is a change in the way that some of the money is shared, rather, DMV sharing of monies with registrations that are done either locally or done through the DMV office in Albany. Explain the current situation and what's wrong with it and what kind of change you would want.
Yes. Since I've been in, I've been pushing hard and getting the word out anywhere I can to encourage people to consider renewing their registration, their vehicle registration locally. Because if you come into one of our auto bureaus or you mail your registration in using one of our envelopes, our green envelopes that we make available in all the public libraries and all auto bureaus, or you can go online and we'll mail one to you from the clerk's office. If we process that, Erie County keeps 12.7% of that transaction. If you mail it into Albany or go online to Albany, we get nothing. And 12.7% we get if you do it locally. Now, that doesn't sound like a lot. The lion's share still goes to Albany. But if everyone in this county renewed at their, you know, every other year when people renewed it, everybody renewed locally, each and every year we keep $1.5 million more money here in Erie County as opposed to sending it off to Albany. And this money doesn't stay within the clerk's office. This money goes to Erie County to provide critical resources for our services that we provide in the county. So we want to make people know about that. And when people do know, I think they tend to say, we'd rather our money, that money stay here locally. And so we're building on that. So we've been having a successful effort in that, but I and other clerks have been always caught on the question of why do we only get, when somebody comes in and does a transaction and our Erie County Auto Bureau and our Erie County employees process that transaction, why do we only get 12.7% of that? That doesn't seem like an equitable sharing arrangement with our partners with the state. So what we're saying to the state, and all our clerks are on the same page with this, is let us keep more of that money. You know, we have property tax caps that hinder the ability of localities to raise property taxes, which I'm in favor of. If you're going to do that, let us keep some of the revenue here so we can be a little more self-sustaining and operate in our local government. So this is a major legislative item. People say, well, what would you want the sharing? How's 50-50? That sounds fair to me. But even if it went up from 12.7% to 17%, Erie County would retain about $1 million more a year of its revenue, and that's significant each and every year. So we're heartened by the fact that all the clerks now, it started out of West New York, all the eight counties in West New York adopted a resolution. Now it's been adopted by the statewide clerks association, the county Council of Erie County Governments, or the Association of Erie County Governments has adopted it as a major legislative plank this year. So we think we have some really good momentum to get this adopted in Albany, and it would really mean a great deal, not just for Erie County, but local governments throughout the state of New York.
Is that 12.7 the only revenue you get from the state for hosting these bureaus, or do they give you some sort of operating fee beyond that?
No. So we, out of that 12.7%, we pay all the expenses of operating our auto bureaus, paying my employees, and then anything after that, we give back to Erie County in revenue that they can use to support other critical services. And that translates right now in about $3 million a year. So that's significant money. We're one of, outside the taxing, our property tax department and taking sales tax and other fees, we are the only place in Erie County that is making money for the county and giving it back to support critical services. And I think we played a critical role in holding the line on tax, on property taxing. So that's why we feel so strongly about this, that this helps stabilize finances so we don't have to entertain things like more taxes on your property, which everybody clearly does not want, and I fully agree with.
803-0930 is our number. Chris, we got a break coming up here shortly, but let's squeeze in one call before we do. Chris Jacobs is here, Erie County Clerk. That means, among other things, of course, the DMV, but also some of the operations involving pistol permits, involving deeds, involving liens, a lot of things the clerk's office is involved in, touching your life in a lot of different ways. If you'd like to join us and get in on the conversation and ask him a little bit about how he is touching your life today, we'd love to have you aboard. 803-0930 is the number. Vince in Amherst, kick it off with you.
Yeah.
Hi.
Wait till can I turn the radio off?
Absolutely. It's better if you do. Just listen to us on the telephone. Go and turn your radio off, and Chris can hear you right over the phone. You can hear us as well. Are you there, sir? Vincent Amherst, are you there?
Yeah, Chris, I'm back.
Okay.
You got a proposal to have everyone with a driver's license come in and get their picture taken once a year. Now, would you consider this? I don't vote anymore by going to the gym. I got the absentee ballot. My face on my driver's license, I haven't changed. I have a nice smile on the picture. But disabled, how in the world? I got very limited driving.
Yeah.
Doctor's offices and that, but that's fine. And so if you could do, I don't have a computer. If you could do something for the disabled, like by mail, I could mail in my license and you could mail it back, or I don't know how the hell to do it.
Sure, sure. Sure, I wanted to be clear. I think that maybe this was misreported. What I was talking about is not every year, only when you renew your driver's license, which is only every 8 years. That's what I was saying is when you have to renew your driver's license every 8 years, that a new picture is required. And I'll tell you why. The state adopted, and this was kind of controversial, about 2 years ago, maybe a little less, they adopted a new contractor to provide the driver's licenses. And they were criticized a bit because they spent they didn't go to the lowest bidder. They actually went to one of the higher bidders. And it was, I can't remember, the $30 million more or something like this. And one of the rationales for it was the technology of those driver's licenses would make them very hard to tamper with.
Yeah, I remember all that.
And you know, driver's licenses are one of the forms you can travel domestically in the air. And so, you know, this was one of the reasons that they were investing in this technology. So you couldn't tamper with it for safety reasons.
But well, how about something that you send to the disabled drivers that will give me the head of the line to get a picture taken? Because
absolutely, we do have that, absolutely. But the problem I see is if you invest in all this technology yet, somebody can not only not do it every 8 years, but they could go for 24 years and not have, or 32 years and not have.
That's fine with me because at my age, who knows? Only God knows whether I'm going to be here.
Right. But the good thing is if you renew 8 years, you have to be around for 8 years. That's the deal.
All right. Vince, thanks for the call. Chris, we got to take a quick break. We'll be back right after this. County Clerk Chris Jacobs is here. It's Hardline on News Radio 930 WBEN. It's Hardline on News Radio 930 WBEN. Good morning. This is Dave Vibo. Erie County Clerk Chris Jacobs is here. Enough time before the break at the bottom. News, of course, a lot of good information coming your way about this bitter cold weather. Alan Harris will have that in just a moment or two, but let's squeeze in first. Stan in Rochester. Hello.
Hey, how are you?
Great.
I'm looking at, let's do everything we can to get our foot in the door on term limits and then tweak it later. But we got to remember, we got to put this thing in cement. Back when Newt Gingrich had the contract with America, Everybody signed it agreeing that they're not going to run for re-election, okay? Conservatives, Republicans, they all lied. They ran for re-election. There was nothing to hold them to it. So first put it in cement and then tweak it.
All right.
I totally agree with that. As I said, we can't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. And I think that, as I said, I would love it changed a little bit. But if this is the best they can do at this point, pass it, put it to the voters. And I think the voters will approve term limits here.
All right. And again, a bit of clarification or emphasis, I guess, Chris. This is not something that your office has anything to do with, but you certainly would be affected by it. So you're weighing in on it.
Exactly, yeah.
All right. Coming up after the news break, one of the things I wanted to chat with you about is another thing where you don't necessarily have the influence, but you've got the bully pulpit. The idea of taking a lot of the services that the county currently offers downtown and moving them into areas around the Broadway market, using that sort of as a catalyst for economic development. We'll talk about that in just a moment or two. Want to get to that. Also, I see on the line here, and if you're holding on hold, we'll get to you in a minute or two. 803-0930 is the number. We've got a question right around the corner about pistol permits as well. Erie County Clerk Chris Jacobs is here. It's Hardline on News Radio 930 WBEN. More after the news, and again, the latest on the weather, something to watch all day today, even through the afternoon. It's News Radio 930 WBEN. It's Hardline on News Radio 930 WBEN. Good morning. This is Dave Debo. County Clerk Chris Jacobs, Erie County Clerk Chris Jacobs, is with us on the line, ready to take up a couple of your calls. Before this next segment is before Meet the Press comes your way at 12 noon, we will talk about his initiative for the East Side, but let's launch back into the calls. Leslie on Grand Island is here. Hi, thanks for waiting. Are you there, Leslie?
Yes, I am.
Okay, go ahead. You're on the air with the county clerk.
Thanks, Chris, for taking these calls. I submitted my pistol permit on Friday and was told that the wait is now about 18 months. I remembered it being 6 months and 12 months, and I was actually shocked with the 18-month delay. And to me, that's an infringement all by itself on the Second Amendment. So my question to you is, what's the root cause of the delays and the huge wait times, and how will you correct this?
You just submitted this past Friday?
Yes.
We are working, and I 100% agree with you that it is an infringement. And this, when the SAFE Act was passed, the governor said this would not be a burden on a local government. It would not be another unfunded mandate on local governments, and it clearly has been. And we have been burdened with other obligations regarding the SAFE Act. We've also, the SAFE Act caused an immense uptick in applications, which has created a backlog. But there's nothing really I can do about that, about changing the law. We have to operate within it. So I am trying very hard to get that wait time down we're striving for a 6-month turnaround, and that's what we're working towards. We're not there, obviously, yet. The first year that the SAFE Act was passed, 2013, we got more applications in the first 4 months of 2013 than we did for the entire year in 2012. So it's been a major, major burden as far, and with no new staff, no additional staff. In addition to the challenge we have of entering in all the opt-out forms, the privacy forms that we had to enter in, to protect the privacy of our pistol permit holders, and we entered in about 40,000 of those, and with no resources from the state to help us do that. One thing we have done in terms of analyzing the way we can try to move this process along is we actually did an analysis. We retained a volunteer from the private sector to analyze our process, and one of the things we came up with in terms of it. In an ideal world, we'd have some more staff, but we have not gotten any new staff. What we have done now, you'll notice, we actually stopped opening to the public once a week on Wednesdays. And what we determined, if we could have a one day a week where our staff is just able to get through the paperwork and not have the public coming in, that we can actually move the process along and will benefit the public long term. And we started that just after the turn of the new year here. And we think that's going to dramatically decrease the wait time within the next 6 months. So that's not helping your situation right now, but in the long term, I think it will. But I completely agree with you. If you are a law-abiding citizen and go through the process, you should be able to get a pistol permit much quicker than the time you are getting it right now. And all I can say is I'm working hard on it. It does trouble me a great deal that we have to do this, and I apologize.
I appreciate that. Isn't the just having pistols and ammunition and everything a revenue-generating proposition for New York State because we have to pay taxes on all these things? So wouldn't we incentivize buying?
You know, it's not the fees largely are dictated by I don't determine any fees. It's dictated largely by the state, some by the legislature, but we lose money on the pistol permits right now. With the amount of the minimal amount that we get on a pistol permit, it's a losing proposition to us.
Well, thanks a lot.
Okay.
What would prevent you from, in some way, and I kind of realize this is a rhetorical question, reallocating staff, shifting them more to permits today, more to deeds tomorrow, more to DMV on Wednesday?
We have done that a bit with our limited staff, since the red and green budget, the infamous red and green budget, the staff in the clerk's office has been down significantly. Staff was cut at that point in time, and we never got that back. Mm. And so we are very challenged in terms of staffing in that office. And so we pull when we can, but we also the real estate division in the clerk's office, which is right next door to where the pistols is, has been very, very busy over the last number of years because of the busy real estate economy. So that's a good news for the region. It's just been very challenging for the operation of our pistol permit division. One of the challenges with the pistol permit division is only a portion of it is under our operational control because we are kind of the quarterback. We're kind of the administrative quarterback. The application initially comes to us, and then we work with the state in the mental health background check. And then at the point in time that preliminary documentation is done, then we hand that pistol permit over to local law enforcement to do the character reference check. And then they may, you know, they have staffing issues too. So, and it may take months for them to do that because they have other priorities, and we certainly can't dictate that. Now, in other counties, like Monroe County, only the city of Rochester police and the Monroe County sheriff do the background check. So it's a smaller universe of law enforcement agencies that do that. It's a little more unified on that side. I'm not saying it's necessarily better. It's just as far as an operation.
Sure. Easier to operate for you. Right.
Yes.
Let's bring in Wade in Cheektowaga. I believe it's your turn now. Go ahead. You're on the air. Hi.
Hi. How are you?
Great.
My question is, if you've got a concealed weapons permit from another state, does it still take you that long to get one in New York State?
A concealed permit in another state, I believe so. I don't know if there's, I guess, you know, I don't know exactly if there's a reciprocity with any state in terms of the concealed permit or whether you would have to just apply again. Certainly that would be a factor that the judge would look at, and if you've already been approved, that would help. I'm sure it would help when local law enforcement is doing the reference check that you had a lot of credibility because you already had a concealed carry permit. I don't know that exactly. I could certainly give you my number, and if you want me to check that, I can. I'm learning as I go on the pistol permit. There's a lot of nuances to the different laws in different states, so I don't want to give you bad directions on this. So I'd rather check into it if that's a specific question you have.
All right. Where should he call, Chris?
You can call my number, 858-8123.
858-9123, did you say?
8123.
All right. Before we take our break here, I wanted to ask you a related question, not so much pistol permits, because you heard the caller there say about an 18-month backlog. What about things like mortgages and deeds? I know at one point that was a real problem, a real issue for you.
Yeah, there we've had much more progress, and we're very proud of the work we've done there. You know, when we came into office 3 years ago, we inherited a crisis in terms of a real breakdown in the processes, and the result was we had deeds and mortgages that over 100,000 deeds and mortgages that had not been returned to homeowners for as long as a year and a half. We discovered $3 million in uncashed checks that hadn't been cashed as long as 6 months. Now we have we did a complete re-engineering of that office. We had a volunteer professional from M&T Bank loan to us who is an expert in process improvement, and we really re-engineered that whole office. The turnaround time is less than 2 months to get your deed back now when it was 18 before. We institute a completely new accounting package. Checks are processed within the week. We have really professionalized that office, and now we're taking it to the next level in terms of utilization of technology. And within the next week, actually, we're going to roll out. We've been doing electronic recording of mortgages for the last year. We're going to now have the ability to do the same with deeds. So essentially, you can close on your house without having to come into the county offices anymore. You can do it at your lawyer's office, and many states have done this for years. We're one of the first counties in the state here to utilize that technology. So we're finally creeping into the 21st century as far as that office, and we're really happy. And we think it long-term it'll result in savings for the homeowner.
That is a massive change, because I know in the past people would have to come down and both sides would meet across the table and do it right there in the clerk's office.
Absolutely. And when the lines were long, when we had this real crisis, you know, there was lawyers or paralegals waiting in line, and they were charging to somebody. So there was costs that were being incurred upon the homeowner in some way, shape, or form. So the real situation here that we play a role in the real estate economy, and if we do a good job, we really help that machinery work right, and we take that role seriously.
And this new system would basically be online, their attorney and my attorney and us in the office just going on the computer?
Yeah, right now we're doing it with mortgages. So if you, let's say, we're refinancing your house, right now that entity could probably, and many of them are doing it, we've probably done over 20,000 of them since we started this. We do it completely electronically. Saves on the homeowner, saves the government, no mail costs, paper, you know, on and on and on. So it's a win-win.
All right, when we come back, we will touch on your East Side Initiative and clear out a couple calls, too, before noon, and Meet the Press comes your way then. Chris Jacobs is here, Erie County Clerk. More to come. It's Hardline on News Radio 930 WBEN. Erie County Clerk Chris Jacobs is with us till the top of the hour. Meet the Press comes your way then. Chris, I know you've put forth the idea of kind of consolidating a lot of government services, not downtown, but on the east side in order to spur some economic development there. If downtown is the core of the apple, the center, the place people go to, why do you say this makes sense to move it a little bit east?
Yeah, first, this has really nothing to do with my county clerk role. It's just an idea as a concerned citizen and a person who, prior to being clerk, was in real estate development, doing a lot of stuff in the downtown core. And it's largely actually a private sector effort or nonprofit rather than government. But the having been a person that been in development and now kind of observing more from the outside now that I'm clerk, I am just so thrilled to see how strong and robust the real estate market is in downtown Buffalo. And I mean downtown very broadly, the waterfront, the Canal District, the waterfront, Cobblestone District, Larkin District, of course, the medical campus, Elmwood Village, all those areas. The prices you're seeing that people are paying for real estate now is dramatically different than even 3 or 4 years ago. And what I hear when I talk to people in the development community is we are having problems finding more product, more buildings to renovate and convert into loft apartments and those sort of things. So my kind of thesis here has been, well, now that we really have things going on in downtown Buffalo, is there a way we can leverage that to help an area in the city that has kind of been still left behind? And when you see all that's going on in downtown. If you go east of, let's say, Jefferson Avenue, you really don't see any change for the good there as far as new development activity. You continue to see the poverty rates going up, the depopulation rates going up, et cetera, et cetera. So, and the idea I put forth is maybe it's time to look at transplanting some of the organizations that are in the downtown area and putting them somewhere else where they can have a benefit by their presence there. And the most notable that I've thought about is when you drive down Delaware Avenue, you see these gorgeous mansions on Delaware and a lot of nonprofits that are housing them, United Way, Red Cross, International Institute, Child and Family Services, or you go over right around the medical campus and you see the Diocese of Buffalo building. All these are nonprofits that are in very nice real estate, and they don't pay taxes because they are a nonprofit. And my idea was, boy, what if we challenge the private sector to look to partner with them and have them buy those mansions, renovate them, put them back on the tax rolls, helping the overall municipalities, and then move them somewhere where they can have kind of a public service campus, almost like what we're seeing at the medical campus, but where nonprofits would kind of co-locate and by hundreds and hundreds of people working in some place, create a microeconomy that would start reversing the trend in an area. And for the sake of discussion, I said one area I would think about, because it has infrastructure still that is very solid, is the Broadway Market area. It's a publicly owned building. There's great buildings around it. There's banking institutions around it. But if all these entities, and I did suggest a couple governmental entities too, for instance.
Like police headquarters, you had said, right?
Police headquarters, which there's no reason that needs to be downtown anymore because the jail is not in that building anymore if it's city court. If all those entities moved over together, there could be 600, 700 people working on a daily basis in that area of the Broadway Market, going to work, driving to work, getting something to eat, and creating some economies over there and activity to start reversing the trend. And so it's certainly not a hard and fast proposal. It was to try to get some discussion going, and I think it has started some discussion going. I'm heartened by some of the nonprofits that actually have been receptive to it. One actually has retained somebody to appraise the property just for the sake to begin the discussion. And I actually had a great discussion with a doctor who is a slash now real estate developer who just bought the vacant Kmart across the street from the Broadway Market and is very interested in this concept. So it may now not be done at the Broadway Market. Maybe it's done across the street, but I think it could have the same beneficial effect to that area. And let's remember, it is in the city of Buffalo, but if we continue to have the blight and the population of poverty, it goes out into first-ring suburbs like Cheektowaga and other places. So it's a regional issue, and we need to be proactive to try to reverse this because of the decades of depopulation and poverty in that area.
But, Chris, don't you see a problem in that the character of where these headquarters are now is certainly a place that a lot of people would want to be in compared to the east side?
Well, you know, if somebody told me who was on the board of one of the nonprofits said, Chris, I think we have a fiduciary obligation to explore this opportunity because we are a charitable organization. And it's our obligation to have an impact in the community in every and any way we can. And if entertaining a move like this could help, I think that it should be looked at. And so I think there's a lot of people in those organizations who are willing to look at it. And most of these are the administrative offices of these entities. And I really do think that, and let's keep in mind, if one of these entities was able to sell one of those mansions and put $2, $3, $4 million in the organization's pocket, that's not any more tied in brick and mortar,
sure,
but actually available to perpetuate their core mission, that's a win-win for the organization, too. So I really do think it's something to look at, and I think I'm encouraged by, I'm not saying all of them will, but I do think some are entertaining this seriously.
All right. Tom in Buffalo, thanks for waiting so long. You're on with the county clerk.
I'm thinking Wofford.
Hello, Tom. Are you there? You're on the air.
Hello, I'm here.
Okay, go ahead with your question.
I want to ask about this Albany DMV. Okay, you call the number, and you're only open from 8 a.m. till 12:30. And on top of it, they suspend people's license for 5 years and don't even notify them because of DWIs they got. I don't think that's right. How can you take someone's
right.
license
we have such a problem with people mistaking the Albany, the DMV, the state DMV, with us. And often we get, this is the other thing as far as the fees go, we get calls so often because of the fact that Albany doesn't answer the phone, and or they're confusing, or they send information that doesn't make sense. And we have to spend time, and we're happy to do it. We have to spend time. We're working people through the bureaucratic process in Albany, and we get no remuneration for that. So, you know, with that, as I mentioned, that measly 12.7% is also all the other things we do that get no fee. So that, again, is one of the strong arguments we're making, Albany, that we need a fair share, a more equitable share of the fee-based revenue in terms of the DMVs and auto bureaus.
All right, enough time to squeeze in one last call here, and I think we end the way we began with a look at term limits. John in Rochester, hi.
Hey, Dave. Hey, Chris. Chris, we got a fine county clerk here in Cheryl Donolfo. She's doing a great job. And we do have term limits here in Monroe County, county executive and in the legislature, and I'm pretty sure the county clerk, and it's worked out really well. But one question I have for you, if the governor issues an executive action to give a driver's license to illegal immigrants, are you going to comply?
Well, let's just hope that doesn't happen, because I think that was a disaster when it happened before, and I will cross that bridge when I come to it, but I do believe we are a nation of laws, and I think that there's rights that people have when they're law-abiding. So I was sworn to uphold the Constitution, and I will do that. So I hope that Governor Cuomo does not make the mistake that Governor Spitzer tried to do and quickly reversed it. Because I don't think he will. But I'll do exactly what my predecessor did if that happens, if it ever happens to us.
All right. Sounds like you're saying hold your nose and vote yes, basically.
No. I don't. My predecessor changed when she ran. She was strongly against giving driver's license to illegal aliens when she was a county clerk.
Okay. Chris, that's all we have time for. Thanks so very much. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Erie County Clerk Chris Jacobs. Now it's off to Washington and Meet the Press on News Radio 930 WBEN.